Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Hello, everyone. You are listening to FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for being here today of all days, the World FSHD Day, a day that hits close to home for me. It hits close to home for so many. We're living this every day. If you're a patient, a caregiver, a family member, or maybe you're just someone that's kind of drifted into the show and you're not quite sure what this is about, well, you picked a good day to pick up the podcast. How can you connect with me? Real easy, folks. Email address is fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. You can personally follow me on Facebook. I'm out there. A little Twitter account as well, or X as they call it. You can follow me there if you'd like. You want to be on the show, email is the best way, a topic and so forth. Maybe how you're celebrating FSHD, World FSHD Day. That's kind of where we're at. It is a celebration. It's a celebration of a lot of things. It is a celebration of awareness and in a coming together. However, it's not just about awareness, right? It's about connection. It's about commitment and the courage it takes to keep going, to take on every day, to show up, to keep working hard at even just simple movements, the things that so many others maybe take for granted. It's a chance to shine a light too on this, maybe an orange light. On your shared experiences, to advocate for better, to remind each other that we're not alone. This is that day that marks that. It is critical that you get loud today if you're normally quiet about your FSHD day. Today is the day. Be loud about it. Wear your orange. Do the orange slice selfies. Those are ways that the FSHD Society and so many others in the community share the day, right? Because a lot of people, it affects their face. They can't smile. You put that in front of yourself. And that is a great way to kind of add that attention. Social media can be powerful. We've seen it with disease fighting events, so to speak, or awareness type movements like ALS with the ice water, bucket challenge and so forth. It can be powerful. Numbers can be powerful. I didn't know really like the history of World FSHD Day. It was fantastic that the great people of the FSHD Society shared a little bit of the back details. I guess, shame on me. This has been celebrated, I guess it's 2016. I didn't know it's been that long. And it was after 3 years of healthcare activism in Italy, which is great. My wife has got some Sicilian Italian in her blood, so that's awesome for me. I like that. They were activists. They were brothers, Marco and Sandro Viviano, is how I believe you pronounce it. And they convinced the Italian government to fund a telemedicine system for home care in Italy for citizens with FSHD. So then the government recognized on this day, June 20th, World FSHD Day, or FSHD Day as they had it then. And this date honors that because it's the birthday of the siblings of the mother of, in that family. So, there's more information. Check it out in the show notes. It's on there. There's also a FSHD Society blog about it. Very, very, very interesting. So those are like the history nuggets for you if that's the kind of thing you're into. But then there's also the community itself, getting together. Some people are getting together at parks, perhaps. Maybe they're just going out together. Maybe they're gathering, wearing all their orange, or maybe they're going even bigger. Maybe they have areas in their community, even larger cities, where certain bridges or buildings are being lit up in orange for this day, getting on local news to draw some attention to why this day is important and to the disease itself, which is, the most commonly known form of, or I should say common form, maybe not known, but most common form of muscular dystrophy. But yet, yeah, no one seems to understand why. So this helps in that. So FSHD Society itself is involved. They got with chapters in St. Louis. They have Atlanta and Denver, Alberta, Canada, British Columbia, in Canada, all are being active. I guess as I read this here, paint Canada orange, the lighting of multiple sites across Canada in orange lights, including the Calgary Tower, the Ottawa letter sign, and Niagara Falls. That is phenomenal. That's huge. Sharing stories, photos, and more on social media is a way we can do it within. And they'll do it. Hashtag out there like crazy. That's the things that we really want to do. So, how can you get involved? If even today, we said hashtag world FSHD day, hashtag cure FSHD, hashtag FSHD, faces of FSHD, orange slice selfie, all these things help generate what you need for attention. Let's draw some attention. That equals funding. Funding equals a push towards treatment and cure. Avidity is right in there, right? We know these things are down the pipeline. We need to push harder now. Get more people involved. This is the right time. This is the right day to market and get the word out. Wear your orange, bright as can be. Wearing my shirt. Orange happens to be my favorite color, but. And then throughout this episodes here, these interviews that FSHD, great editors of this show, have put together. I hope you enjoy them. But without a question, this marks a huge, huge day in our community. A day to stand up, say we are stronger than the disease seems to make us. It's strong in the heart. So enjoy the episodes. Enjoy the conversations and the clips and the interviews. I sure have very much have enjoyed creating those throughout this past year. And thanks for listening. Enjoy the show. Here today of this episode, as promised, it's a familiar face for many of us in the FSHD society world and the FSHD community. Jennifer Eggert is here, PhD, licensed clinical psychologist, mindful exercise practice expert, in my opinion. she gives a half eye head turn for those that are only listening. So welcome, Jennifer. Thanks for being here, spending some time with us. I think that's always the issue.
Yeah,
it's great to hear about these things, but people are going, well, it's probably not going to help me. But we hope then it helps the next generation. If that's the hope that you have, it is. Which leads me to this, though. Is hope dangerous?
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
What makes you feel like hope is dangerous?
I was looking through the, I sit and I reflect on the person I'm going to talk to, who mm-hmm. I'm going to interview. I do try to take somewhat deep dives into what they've been doing lately, some of their works, et cetera, LinkedIn and so forth. But for whatever reason, when I was going through the part where I wanted to talk about Fulcrum and this and that, I wrote how to cope. Positive doesn't change the outcome, meaning positive attitude doesn't necessarily change the outcome of a drug, as I was saying. And then I wrote, hope is dangerous. Is hope dangerous? Mm-hmm. So I always try to think of the perspective of the person listening, which is really where most of my questions come from. If I was listening to this for the first time and I had the opportunity to ask something, I would ask that. And you always hear that word hope.
What does hope mean to you? Like what do you, when you
chance,
say hope?
A chance. You got a shot. That to me, for me personally, that's what like hope means. And I can even equate it to something simple like sports, right? Mm-hmm. If for my baseball coaching life, if our team is better, but we kick the ball around the field and the lesser team, in our opinion, starts to take advantage of those things, I think we've just sprinkled hope on them. They have hope that they have a chance. And I've actually told my players, you need to crush their hope. Like, enough of that. They don't have it. Take it away, and psychologically, they will start to crumble. Mm-hmm. You have to attack it back. Now, that's in a competitive mindset, a little bit different than this. But to so kind
of answered your own question.
What's that? Of is hope dangerous? Yes, I totally believe it is. 100%.
No, that's not the question you just answered.
No,
you
hope can be good.
You got to take away their hope because
exactly.
So right. do you want to crumble?
No, but what I mean by I believe it's 100% dangerous is because it's dangerous for the other team. You just had it. We just took it away. It can be taken away by things that are out of your control, of course. Hence why it's hope. It's not a sure thing.
Well, I don't think that hope can be taken away when things don't go well. I used to, you know, for many years, I worked at the VA Medical Center in New York City. And I was part of a palliative care program. So working with people at end of life, working with people who had, you know, cancer and like they were dying, people who were dying.
Right.
And this question of hope was always a discussion. You know, if they're hoping that they're going to get a cure and go back to their life as it was before they had this metastatic disease that they have been trying to, you know, get treatment for and being really debilitated and bedbound, is that what people should have hope for at that stage? And that's what we would talk about. And we would talk about, well, what can you have hope for? And people talked about, I can have hope for enjoying whatever life I have left. I can have hope that I am not in pain.
Mm-hmm.
I can have hope that I am able to decide how I want to deal with these things in my life. So I think, you know, when I would never say like hope is dangerous. I don't think any feeling is necessarily dangerous. But
are you equating dangerous to bad, like a negative thing?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I
misunderstanding you? Yeah, you tell me.
Yeah, I like to take things and absolutely flip it on their head. It drives my wife nuts because I'm like the majority of the society of the world is like, if you say a word, they may equate it as either positive or negative. That's the human brain. It's good or it's bad. One or the other. It's not a. It's like you can't be kind of pregnant. You either are or you aren't. So for me, dangerous can be good. Dangerous can be fuel. It gives you adrenaline. It actually scientifically, if you feel like that, it actually can give you bursts of, I don't know what the chemical reaction is exactly, but it can help. It can actually help you. Just like the word fear.
Adrenaline.
People immediately think like fear is bad. Not necessarily. Fear can be good, right? Because so like for me, dangerous is like hope is dangerous because you're willing to risk that you could be disappointed.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. So I would say I would say that hope is powerful.
Ah, there. That's good. Yeah.
I understand what you mean by dangerous now. I think dangerous for me has kind of like a negative connotation.
It's sure,
like
of course.
That it's threatening. Yeah. And,
yes, absolutely.
But I understand, right? All feelings are contextual. Fear is incredibly adaptive when you are in front of a wild animal that wants to eat.
Yeah.
Fear is necessary so that you can take care of yourself and protect yourself.
Right.
So it's very contextual. Anger, it can be incredibly adaptive. Even sadness in the way that I was talking about and grief before, if it slows us down to really reflect and help us think through things in a different way and get connected with what really matters to us and figure out next steps because we're sort of withdrawing a little bit. So I agree with you. It's very contextual, whether or not something positive or negative. There's very few things that I would say would be all good or all bad.
Right. Yeah.
People hurting other people. I think it's really hard to say that there's a good side to that, but I'm sorry. I'm sort of going off on a tangent.
No, it got a little layer deeper, right, for us. like it may have we've done
for
before.
Them to
I'm
do that.
Pretty
too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Next, in this episode, we are concentrating on a population that seems to be left out. We've talked about this briefly in other episodes, or even concentrated on certain episodes. We've had Allie on the show in the past, Kristen on the show in the past. I don't know if we've had Debbie on, but we all are here together to talk about, I think, what needs to be talked about more and more and more. And that is, you know, it's early onset, yes, but there's other parts of the population that these women represent. And that's what we're talking about today. It's very important that you're tuning in. I'm glad that you are. So, and within that, you attended the first ever pediatric summit last year in California. Can you talk about that in Sonoma?
Yeah, so we have partnered with Solve FSHD and Eva Chen, and she's been very gracious with her time. She's jumped right on board with the pediatric, you know, she championed the pediatric cause, and she brought together all the pharmaceuticals in the space, and the three of us, we went to Sonoma, we gave a presentation about our children, and then we listened to them about what will it take to get pediatrics and early onset into clinical trials.
Do you feel like you made headway, momentum, pushing in that right direction with that?
Kristen, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, so one quick note back on the reason for the mm-hmm. involvement and why people are getting involved and getting behind the pediatric and the early onset is that there is a belief both in the side that we've heard from the scientific community as well as from other researchers and doctors that if you can put it into the kids because they have a more severe progression, you will get the effectiveness of the drug faster. So this could actually increase the time. If you look at the time it took for Fulcrum to figure out whether this was working or not, they were using a set of patients that don't progress very fast. So how do you improve effectiveness when you have patients that are not progressing quickly? But when you can look at a child and see, and we've got people who've done clinical, have done research on see in a matter of 3 months or less the progression in a child. So if you can see progression in a child in 3 months or less, then you're going to see the effects of a therapy a lot faster than you're going to see the progression of an adult that's taking years to progress.
It's also less expensive because they are children with smaller bodies. So it's less expensive because of the dose and also because you need the shorter time for the clinical trial.
So this isn't a selfish mom saying this is what we want done because it's our children. This is actually a benefit to the whole community that's been ignored.
And also, we all know, you know, the earlier intervention, the better outcome. You know, if you can get an intervention when they're young and still have a lot of muscle, whether they're 18 or 8 and right. preserve that muscle, you know, they're going to have a better quality of life.
Yeah. It seems like though then, Kristen, that's kind of common sense to say, well, then we should start with the kids. Mm-hmm. So why, how come it feels like it's the opposite?
Because the risk, people don't want to take the risk. It's risky to go into kids. It's risky to do something different than what's been done all along. Allie put out a video in about, was it 4 months ago, where it was right in everyone's face of, if we don't take risks, then the outcome's always going to be the same. If we don't take risks, we're going to continue to just allow our more severe patients, whether they're adults or children, to let's call it what it is, go towards, you know, a shortened life. Like there's a lot of people with respiratory issues. The disease is so severe in so many cases, but we don't talk about it. We never have as a community. We've always been like, oh, it's you just get muscle weakness. No, there is a severe health complication with this disease. And there are countless patients every year dying from respiratory complications at an early age. And we don't talk about it as a community, and we don't want to stress how severe this disease is. If we would bring that up and talk about it, and we would start to use some of the patients who can help us solve this thing a lot faster and not just ignore them, we may be able to solve this faster. I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know for sure, but that's kind of what our research and all the talks we've had with everyone has led us to that. But for years, we've just talked about this disease being muscle wasting, a nuisance. You can't lift your arms. Well, that is not even the beginning of the severity that so many patients are facing from a health perspective that we don't talk about as a community.
Yeah, I mean, that's just scratching the surface, right? I mean, that's the same diagnosis I received along with many others I've talked to, either through this format of the podcast or outside of it. And it's always this, well, it's not life threatening. It's life shortening. I still don't know the damn difference. So, and then of course I got the speech of, well, it might not necessarily be the FSH that gets you. It's going to be something that FSH caused that'll get you. That's nice to know, right? So it's like stumble down the stairs.
Yeah. It's if you didn't have FSHD, then you wouldn't be in that situation. I also just want to bring up quality of life. I mean, it is absolutely true that it affects, respiratory issues, increased fall risk. Unfortunately, there is I think there have been some suicides in this community. We're talking about quality of life as well. And these are children. I just would like people to think about what was your childhood like, your children's childhoods. We're talking about children who have to deal with this daily. And I will tell you that out of the three of us, my child has the most mild case. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to cringe saying mild because it is absolutely devastating. And we tried to think about this one day when we were thinking about her progression. Can't think of a single activity that she does where FSHD does not affect her in some way. Right. So quality of life is huge.
Yeah, there's a lot more hurdles than the average person. Let's face it. You just talked about it, Debbie. The travel alone, everything is more difficult when you have this disease, especially at the young ages. We're seeing that. I know the voice of the patient worked as the general population, lack of a better term, for the FSHD society, community. They did that. It was impactful. The fact that you're attacking that side of it with this population of people that have been overlooked, right? It's spot on. You're putting pressure, hopefully on pharma, to kind of say, oh, wow, this is, someone told me once, and maybe it's a little insensitive, but basically it's emotional currency. You're trying to show people that this is affecting people. This isn't just cells and things. There are faces behind that. Debbie, you had a participation, I suppose, in more of a kids focused in part of the Connect conference and Denver was really about the kids. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was really excited about that. So with the FSHD Society, we worked to, for the first time, have children there at the Connect conference. It was a small group of kids, but they had fun. They interacted with pharmas. And so one of the events was to make a piece of artwork. And so each kid, I believe, had about two representatives working with them. And so I hope it was impactful. As we're talking about some of the difficulties, I mean, to be honest, even just doing something like that is hard. It's hard to reach across a table to get a marker. And they were talking about other aspects of their lives. I know Ellie's son, Sam, had been talking about the difficulties of driving and having accommodations and the vehicle that he needs. So I think it was a great opportunity. I'm grateful for the society for doing that, and Solve helped with that as well. The families and the representatives who were there, and we just need more of that. We need to come together, and we're hoping to maybe have in every the alternate years to get together as families and let these kids have fun, have peer support, and continue to advocate.
Yeah, that's actually interesting when you said that, Debbie. That was the first thing that popped in my head. Like, maybe it has to be its own standalone connection with the kids. The nonprofit that I work with here in the Wisconsin area, they're called Team Up With Families, but they have a camp for kids that, have whatever the disability may be. It could be muscular dystrophy or so forth. And this camp also involves their siblings, and it's like one of the only ones in our area that's more family inclusive instead of just, mm-hmm. a child that is dealing with the disease. It's also their siblings or their other parts of their family.
Yeah, that's true. Like that, and I'll tell you that my son went as well. My Maggie, who has FSHD, and my mm-hmm. son Sam, and I went. Mm-hmm. He had a blast. And it really was great for the kids to be able to spend time together and hang out. And that was something that Maggie lacked for a while. She had met some adults recently with FSHD, and that was wonderful. And she really enjoyed having some time with other kids who understand the challenges, the daily challenges of this disease.
And it's also just good for the entire FSHD population. I heard so many times, like, wow, I've never seen so many kids here. And in some families, it depends on how it runs in their family. Some of them have never seen kids with FSHD, and they think it doesn't exist. Even within the FSHD community, they think it only happens later on in life. So for all of them to see it, it's sort of a rallying point to say, oh, wow, look at all these kids. They're also affected. I didn't realize that.
I think a lot of people have been approaching this too, thinking, oh, maybe I'm like in, I want something for myself, but really what I'm caring about is I'm thinking about my kids. Maybe my kids have it, or maybe my grandkids. So hopefully we can keep getting stronger as a community to help everybody with this disease. And Connect was really nice too for us adults, as parents, to be together and hang out socially, and also just to give some support too, because it's certainly challenging as a parent to see your child progress and progress and progress and lose abilities and activities and hobbies.
And Tim, one point that we want to make sure is loud and clear is that this isn't about us against pharma or pressure on pharma. This is about all of us coming together as a community, having conversations, and not just making assumptions about one population over another. And education, educating pharma, educating FDA, educating ourselves on what this disease is all about and how we get a broad-based participation in the exploratory therapies that are out there, and giving people that option and choice. But it's not, we don't want to create a us versus them. We want to create a let's have conversations, and let's stop, not talking. Let's talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, and have the conversation that pushes things forward quickly. And use all the tools we have to make progress as fast as possible, and not throw up smoke screens or make assumptions that are not entirely the right assumptions.
Welcome to this episode here of the FSHD Straight Talk, which is it's still tough for me, Chris. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with that when you change the title of a show or a podcast, and you got to make sure you don't give the old title, it's the new title. Anyway, it's been several episodes, but this one I am excited to bring to you. We're covering a multitude of different parts in this episode, including a little conversation of World FSHD Day, as we want to cover that in this conversation as well. But we welcome our guest. I'm always excited to talk to Mr. Carino. He is a little bit of a radio idol of mine. He's a play-by-play radio announcer for the Brooklyn Nets, has FSHD, has a wonderful foundation he has started called the Chris Carino Foundation. We welcome him now today. How's it going, Chris?
Tim, it is always great to be on with you, and I didn't realize I had that kind of impact in your life, so thank you.
Yes, but, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well-deserved. Well, the things you. That you've accomplished, the things you've done on air with the foundation, which kind of leads me to the next part. Those that probably know you also, not just for being the radio voice of the Nets, but the Chris Carino Foundation that you've created has done amazing things. How long has the foundation been in existence?
The seeds of it were planted around 2010, and then 2011 is when we launched. Nice. And had an event. Yeah.
Beautiful. And what are it was it a gala? Am I?
Yeah, we did a gala to launch the foundation at the time, and it was we've done it. We did it about 9 years in a row, and then COVID hit, and we weren't able to do it. And then it was always kind of up in the air for a while. So we haven't done it since COVID. But what I'm grateful for is that even without an event, we get a lot of support financially to fund the things that we need to do. And we may go back to doing some in-person events, sure. But that becomes very taxing,
yeah.
Especially as it's become more taxing for me. It becomes it's hard to do. It's hard to put on a
It is. It's a
like
huge
we would throw a wedding every right. year.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And people don't, I don't think, realize really a lot of the back work. Most people don't. Like, as soon as the one is done, you might have a week off from it, but you're probably starting again, planning for the next one already.
Yeah. I get really busy, and then I can't really focus on it until a few months before. We may go back, but the point being is that the work that we're doing is important, and it goes on, and I'm still out and soliciting people to support us financially, and we do, and we get enough that, you know, we can support what we want to support, and our, you know, we're very lean. It's just a group of friends and family, and we're able to make decisions on things very quickly, which is important to us too. You know, we really don't have any agenda. I don't pay anyone. I don't use any of the money to pay rent or anything like that. So everything we bring in goes out.
Goes right out.
And it's something that I have a group of researchers that I know I like to fund, that I'm comfortable with, and other organizations like FSHD Society or Friends of FSHD out in Seattle. And, you know, Terry may call me and say, hey, we want to co-fund. Would you co-fund something with me? And I'll say, yeah, just send me the information. And then I consult with a person or two, and we do it. You know, we don't have to wait for big board meetings or anything like that. So we try to be lean and quick, mm-hmm. and get the money where it needs to go in a short period of time.
Yeah, I saw on the Chris Carino Foundation.org site that here in 2024, it looks like a grant, some grant work was done for the Nationwide Children's Hospital out of Ohio State, right? And you did. Yeah, you merged with Friends of FSHD Research. We just actually talked to Terry and Rick on an episode that correlates with World FSHD Day.
That's a $110,000 grant, I believe, that we co-funded with them. And we had last year, we actually, well, we had gotten Dr. Nazir Saad out at Nationwide Children's, who comes from the kind of the Scott Harper tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. At Ohio State, who we've been funding for years. We did a lot of Scott Harper's seed funding before he then got his NIH grants and things like that. But Dr. Saad is trying to come up with a better biomarker in the bloodstream, which is really important, especially now where we're getting into clinical trials. Lack of a really solid non-invasive biomarker is something that can hold you back a little bit. And I think that we find it very important.
Right.
So when Dr. Saad came to us about his biomarker study, we started funding that. And now this work with Terry and Rick and the Seattle group is kind of continuing, you know, helping him grow that study and continue it and do a little bit more. And Terry and Rick Colello out in Washington, the FSHD friends, I got to know them over the years. And when we had our bike race, not a bike race, but we had a group of people that biked from Seattle to New York.
Oh, wow.
And in an effort to raise awareness and money, that was back in, that was a while back now, 2017, I believe that was. We decided they wanted to go cross country. I had a group of bike riders who wanted to go cross country. And I said, why not start in Seattle and we'll hook up with Friends of FSH. So they housed the riders and they got us started. We did a big event from the Space Needle and everything out there. And had some fundraising events out there with Terry and Rick, and stayed with them for a few days, and they become good friends, and they're doing incredible work with Friends of FSHD Research. Just great people who have just been, you know, selfless and relentless about trying to find a cure and a treatment for this disease.
Yeah. And they are very, parallel with your foundation too, because just like you were talking about lean, all the money goes right back into cures, treatments, etc., research and so forth. It all really falls in line. You guys are quite a force with the two put together.
And Terry, nice, you know, I gotta give Terry Colello credit, because her and Rick, because they were the ones that drew that Seattle group and Dr. Tapscott into FSHD research. They provided it funding for him to get involved, and he's made some of the most important discoveries in FSHD research. So they deserve a heck of a lot of credit. If we have a treatment and a cure one day for this disease, the story of it cannot be told without Terry and Rick Colello out in Seattle.
Nice. Well said. So we kind of bring in, you know, one corner of the U.S. to the other, one coast to the other. As we're recording this episode, we're getting closer to June 20th, which is World FSHD Day. So I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit. And I think that also correlates for the trip you did to Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. Really kind of, you're definitely representing our community. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, so this was the FSHD Society and Fulcrum Therapeutics and their lobbying firm tried to, you know, think of ways that we could help get the, you know, with FSHD treatment clinical trials going on around the country and different companies. We've got to try to grease the skids here a little bit, you know, it's going to require FDA approval. It's going to require funding and things like that. And we need to start talking to people on Capitol Hill about it. And FSHD Society reached out to me and wanted to know if I'd be part of a group that would go. It's funny, Tim, because I've always, you know, even when we started our foundation back in 2011, when I kind of became public about having FSHD and, you know, putting my name on a foundation was my way of humanizing FSHD.
Yeah.
You know, letting people know there are actual people behind this disease. It's not just letters and initials.
Yeah.
And also taking a leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, all right, I have this disease and I'm willing to be a leader here in whatever I need to do. And I always did, in my mind, see myself one day on Capitol Hill, you know, maybe sitting in front of one of those committees.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got that call, if I'd be interested in going to Capitol Hill, I jumped at it. You know, I was like, this is absolutely what I think. What I've been doing since 2011 was building towards. So, you know, this was going to take an effort, kind of a targeted effort of who we met with and that, you know, everybody at FSHD Society did a great job in doing that and the logistics of getting us all up there and knowing who to speak to and putting constituents in front of their congressmen and their senators. And, you know, just in my group, a young man named Sam, who was from Arizona, who was able to meet with, you know, Senator Kelly from Arizona, got us a meeting with his staff, and Sam and his mom met with Senator Kelly, and then we had Congressman Siskamani out in Arizona, who our group met with because they were constituents.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of that. We're making sure that we had people that were interested in meeting with us for the certain reasons, you know, beyond just doing the right thing here. You know, they want to meet with constituents. And but all the staffers we met with, we were sort of prepared for the worst case scenarios of staffers rushing us through the meeting and looking at their phone and not being attentive, or
right,
just giving us 10 minutes in a hallway rather than in a conference room and in their offices. But for the most part, everyone, you know, that we met with were really attentive and wanted to get to know what we were there for and what they could do to help us. And now we know that, you know, coming out of those meetings, we've gotten some sponsorship on a resolution for World FSHD Day.
Yep.
Which was one of the things we had on our agenda to do. And the other things that we were trying to accomplish are harder to quantify, I think. But like I told our fellow FSHDers that when we were there, that, you know, probably we're going to meet with some young staffers, and many of them will never have heard of FSHD.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can come out of those meetings with people on Capitol Hill in Washington who now know what FSHD is, may be in a position one day to help us. That's the job we came to do. Mm-hmm. And make some connections so that we can contact people down the road when we need things, when a treatment's up for approval for the FDA, when clinical trials are happening. There are so many things we want to accomplish, and I don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish them, but if we don't start somewhere, we will never accomplish them.
Right.
You know, young staffers become senior staffers. Mm-hmm. Young staffers maybe one day become congressmen and senators. If we can make these people advocates for us, if we can convince them to ask the right questions of the FDA committees, of knowing that there is no cure or treatment for FSHD. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good here. If there's something that can stop the progression of this disease in 5 years, if you start taking it now, that's a win for people with FSHD.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And generations the FDA needs to know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're trying to use that, grease the wheel a little bit, recognize that we're here as a community. It's something similar that you said in an interview after you got the award that we were talking about. You said it was nice to be recognized. It was nice to be seen. It sounds like that's similar fashion here on Capitol Hill. You wanted our community to be recognized. You wanted us to be seen.
You know, there's so many communities out there of people that are just trying to fight through all the noise, right? To mm-hmm. be seen, to be recognized. And that's part. You can't be helped until you're seen.
So as I mentioned, thank you guys for being here for this episode. Our featured guest is Dan Wilson. He's from Indianapolis area, as we were just talking about before I hit record, and how I ventured that direction this last month. We'll be traveling that way again soon. And Dan reached out to us through the email, which so many of you can do at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. It's a great way to connect with me. Dan, you said the website like about a month or so ago. Is that right?
Yes, I did. Thanks, Tim, for having me. I found it on the FSH Society website, where I attend the Wellness Hour.
And where have you shifted? You know, people that retire, either I hear two different ways, right? They're settled in with the fact that maybe life has a different pace, maybe slowed down. They're okay with not having a mission for the day necessarily. Maybe they have things to do, groups they become involved with, and so forth. And then there's others that kind of miss the routine of like a work day or a purpose, you know, within the day and so forth. So kind of which way did you lean? Did you feel like you still needed some type of, you know, activity to do as much as possible as you transitioned into retirement? Was that difficult?
Well, that's a good question, Tim, because I did, when I retired, and still to this day, feel like I need to have a purpose. Mm-hmm. So when I retired, we were still meeting virtually, and I did some volunteer work for the Indiana Joint Asthma Coalition. Oh. And what we do is we provide education to certain counties and cities here in the state on asthma management. It could be in the primary care setting, nurses, other allied health professionals, just to get them current and up to date on what the current asthma guidelines are in COPD, and provide education that way.
So it's,
and as a matter of,
yeah, go ahead.
As a matter of fact, on the Wellness Hour, provided, I think I was a guest speaker on the respiratory complications of FSH, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So that helped with the purpose.
Yeah, that was going to be kind of one of my kind of branch off questions to the line of work that you did with respiratory. They tested me as well, kind of getting the baseline and where you're at and the pulmonary and all those things. So did you ever come across someone else with FSHD within your line of work when you did respiratory therapy or the other, you know, roles that you played in there?
You know, that's interesting. I have never come across anybody else that I can recall that has FSH.
Wow.
And I've always wanted to have some interaction with those other FSHers, if you will. So that's where I find that I get that peace of mind that it's just not in my head. There are others that are struggling with this the same way I do with the wellness hour. But that, to answer your question, not in my line of work have I ever come across anybody else with FSHD.
Yeah, that was just interesting. That just question popped in my head because I thought, I wonder if you did, what would that have been like, that kind of interaction? I work at a nonprofit organization as my regular job, and one of the volunteers was a retired pediatrician, an older gentleman than myself, and he came in with a type of walker and other things to help him walk and move. And we got on a deep conversation about how he had something with they thought was FSHD. It was remarkable, the conversation I had with this volunteer, and his name is David, and David was telling me the stories and this of how they're trying to pin down the disease and this, and it turned out it wasn't FSHD. They actually still don't know what it is, but it's very similar. It's like attacking his body in a similar way. So for me, the first time I truly met someone else with the disease was during a chapter meeting in Chicago area, because I was at the time the closest one. I thought, I'm going to drive to this. I was not prepared for the interaction that took place or feeling a certain way. I didn't think, I'm just meeting people. So have you met someone with FSHD, face to face, had that kind of interaction yet?
Yes, I have. I actually went out to Columbus, Ohio, where they were having a Columbus, Ohio chapter meeting,
Okay.
and I believe they had a guest speaker somewhere on the campus of Ohio State.
Okay.
And that's been the first and the only time I had any interaction with other FSHers.
What was that? Can you recall what that first time was like?
It was exciting. To know that I'm a part of that group, and we had a lot in common when we were talking about our AFOs, if you
Yeah,
will, or anything. Okay. But unfortunately, it was just so short because it was a long meeting, and people were just ready to go, and many of us came from a long distance. But yeah, I remember that well.
You still connected with the chapter there in Ohio area?
No, I'm not. And I've often given thought about starting a chapter here in Indianapolis. We don't have one here in Indianapolis, Indiana. The closest we have is either Columbus, Ohio, or St. Louis, Missouri. So, yeah, if there are any FSHers out there in your listening audience here in Indianapolis that would be interested in co-leading, be happy to talk to with you about that.
That's great. That would be awesome if this helped make that connection. I think that area, that state could benefit from it for sure. I do believe there's more people that have this disease than even we all realize. I don't know how it's I've said this before, how rare it really is. I think it's like underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed often. So yeah, it would be cool, right, to connect and like see what other people in the community have it and then support with each other, and who knows what that leads to. We've had some remarkable group chapter groups branch off to other groups, or they have phenomenal fundraising events. If it's the walk and roll or something that they kind of organize that has kind of its own culture based on the area. I mean, just imagine if you had a Indianapolis 500 type event, right? I mean, for
Sure.
fundraising, those kind of things. So I always find it cool, like how certain states, certain areas of the country, kind of grab a hold of that and they kind of make it their own. It's always fun. It's always kind of cool to see how things kind of grow and for the sake of, curing this stinking disease, anything we can do. To the conversation, as we thought we would bring you a great guest as we continue to expand the show, talking about people in the community. Nia Stivers, who's from Alabama, founder on social media. I do kind of hunt there, just so everybody knows. I'm kind of looking for guests out there. So if you all of a sudden see me send you a DM, don't be surprised. And Nia said yes, which is amazing. So thanks for joining us and spending some time on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting to be here.
Yeah. Like most guests, people always want to know, like, well, who is this person, or like, what are they about? And I like to answer those questions for them, like the listener, right away, and kind of, grab a hold of them. And for you, obviously you have FSHD, mm-hmm. like I do and so many others that are listening, or they're obviously involved within the community of FSHD. And yes. First question is, I guess, your FSHD story, like the diagnosis part and like that journey. Can you share that with us?
So I was 11 years old. And at that time, my mother was in her 40s, but had not been, well, maybe had received her diagnosis, but it just at that time was definitely not anything that was known about. We didn't know anybody else in the family that had had it. And so she just knew that there were things about her all her life that she said, I might have had some trouble reaching up high on shelves, and I never was the fastest runner in school and those sorts of things, but definitely did not know. And they did muscle biopsy when she was in her 40s, and that's how they discovered that she had muscular dystrophy. And so, as I was saying, I was 11, and at that time I was cheering and I was playing softball, and I had just learned how to do a back handspring. I was somewhat athletic back in the day, and it's hard to even imagine that now, but I was then. And I can remember my dad saying, Nia, sit up straight and hold your shoulders back, you know, have good posture. And I thought that I was, or was trying to do it as much as I could. My shoulder blades already and my entire life were already winging. I just never knew anything different than that. And so they took me to a neurologist in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He was not a specialist in muscular dystrophy. My mother did not have a specialist in muscular dystrophy. And I can remember sitting in that doctor's appointment and that doctor saying, he had me smile. He had me, I can remember even sing, row, row, row your boat. And I guess he was just, you know, listening to my pronunciation. Of course, now I understand that some of those things can be affected as well as time goes on. But I remember thinking, what does this have to do with anything? And, you know, just so confused as an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit it right on the head. It's that grief. And it's never, it's different than the grief of like losing someone, obviously, because it's more reoccurring, to be honest, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like relenting. It's okay. I lost this. And then you start learning to adapt to things and how to do things differently. Similar to you, like you probably realized you were adapting when you didn't know it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You really, saw what was really happening to you. I mean, when I was diagnosed and the explanation came out, my wife goes, that's why you put your jacket on weird. And my wife, she's very like, you know, it that way. And I'm like, I put my jacket on weird. She's like, yeah, your arms are going all over the place because you can't bend it the right way because your scapula is like, you know, fighting you. I said, oh yeah, I suppose. Or like when I close a drawer, like a bottom dresser drawer, I can't shove it with my arm. It's not strong enough from my shoulder, you know, where you would get the push. I have to take my knee, bump it into my elbow, closes the, and I would just do that by instinct. I thought everybody did that.
Yes.
And like, wait a minute, nobody else does that? They're like, no, no one else does.
You're exactly right. I did not realize until I was older. And then I think back and that I couldn't hold my, like if I wanted to be called on in class to raise your hand. I can remember that I would prop my arm on my other arm and hold my hand up in class. Never thought anything about
it. Never thought of it. Right. You instinctually do it.
Yes.
I have to do this. So this is how I'm going to adjust to do it. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. And it's hard not to go down the rabbit holes of this sucks. Woe is me.
Oh,
you know,
it's, but, and I don't know. Sometimes I do go down that rabbit hole every other day. It seems like.
Now, you being a teacher, when you said being, and I admire you for being a teacher. I think not to be weird, arrogant guy here, but I think somewhere along my early path, I think when I was getting counseled of what to do with my life, they missed it. I mean, I worked with kids when I was a teenager, like coaching them and doing stuff and always being like the organizer of that kind of thing. And a pretty decent communicator. I actually had a stuttering issue when I was young, but obviously worked through that. And
But
yeah,
podcast.
and
I
now
love
I
it.
do this. It's like, but I think they missed the mark of like what was probably something I would have liked, and teaching would have been probably on my front end of interests. So I always admire teachers. It's a huge undertaking. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of personal time you put into it beyond the classroom. So amazing that you do that. And considering that you have muscular dystrophy, you're dealing with FSHD on top of this, what I would imagine is a rigorous schedule of being a teacher, right? I mean, it's physically taxing, mentally taxing. But going back to the fact that you tell your students right away, first day you said, "Hey, I have this." How does that come across to them?
So there's always that feeling of there's a nervousness every semester, every time you have a new class and these new faces that you learn. And it's typical that most teachers will spend time doing a getting to know you activity between themselves and the student and giving them some background. But I do use an electric wheelchair at school. In my home, I don't use it. But I probably could if I were very honest with myself. That's just one more thing I'm just holding on to. But every day when I come to school, I text my class, some teacher friends, and I tell them I'm leaving my house. It takes me 9 minutes to leave. They drive, everybody calls it Scoot Scoot. That's my trick wheelchair's name, Scoot Scoot.
Yeah, excuse me.
They drive Scoot Scoot to my parking place and it is waiting for me to pull up. And I take one step out of my car and get in Scoot Scoot. At
Wow.
the end of the day, they ask me, am I either going to stay to work and
Yeah.
pull my car up close for me? Or they will just wait on me and go out to the car with me so they can ride Scoot Scoot back in.
Wow.
When I so it's obvious, of course, I'm riding a wheelchair. So the kids are going to know that there's something about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just explained to them, I have this disease and I keep telling them the name and I always just tease and say, now I'm saying the disease, that does not mean that it is contagious. So my front runner chickens do not have to worry that it's going to get on you. But I explained to them what the disease is, how it affects the different parts of my body, that they would see my face muscles, that my smile, I smile as wide as I can for them and show them that I can't show my teeth. I talked to them about that some of my facial expressions just, I may not have a lot.
Yeah.
And I explained to them about not being able to raise my arms as much, which has continually gotten much, much worse. And of course, I walk around in front of them in front of the classroom
Okay.
so that they can see this is how I walk when I get up from my desk and go to Scoot Scoot. And when I get up out of Scoot Scoot, you'll see me pull up against my file cabinet and push up off of it while these are things that are just going to be normal. But
Yeah.
I also need you guys to know that there's a very, very good chance that at some time this semester or sometime in the school building, you're going to see me fall. And if that happens, I teach high school, by the way. If that happens, I'm going to need your help because I can't get
Okay.
more by myself. And so when that happens, I'll tell you guys how to help me and how to come scoop me up and help me. And I just don't want you guys to ever be embarrassed or uncomfortable and feel like, what is wrong with this woman? And she never talks about it. It's an elephant in the
Yeah.
room that nobody
Right.
says anything about. And I said, I'm very sarcastic and I love to, cut up and laugh about it and make jokes. And I want y'all to laugh at me when I say those things. Don't look at me weirdly because that's going to make me feel awkward. And I want y'all to ask questions anytime you want to because you're learning from me how people in the world who are different want to be treated. And I
Yeah.
always say to them that even if you're in the mall and you see somebody and you know they're blind, don't stare at them. Because I did ask those girls back in college that I would take to the grocery store, do you know it if somebody
Yeah.
stares at you? And they said, do you know that feeling like somebody's walked in the room, but your back's to the door? That they have that same feeling. And, that I am somebody, I'm a person, I'm not my legs or I'm not my wheelchair. Look at me in the eyes when I'm talking.
Yeah.
Treat somebody like they're just a human being. And because I am vulnerable and honest with my students, they are so vulnerable and honest with me.
Really?
It's nothing that I may have a student that will stay after that very first day and reveal something very private about their own life, or
Wow.
send me an email or something like that. And so I just try to start my, it's most important to set my relationship with my students. And so those
That's
students,
great. Wow.
I said, I need you to carry me on your shoulders for 100 miles. My students would line up and do anything in the world that I would ask them to do.
Wow.
Carry things for me. They come in several times a day and say, you need anything? There's nothing that I'm too embarrassed to have to ask them to do. And I have such fabulous coworkers and family around me that I'm even comfortable enough with them that if I were to need help, if I'm struggling to get these pants up and buttoned, well,
Right.
I got some really great friends that'll go in the bathroom.
Thank you for joining me today on this World FSHD Day, June 20th. I hope you enjoyed all the clips, the conversations, the interviews, the things that were put together. Thank you so much for the FSHD Society, Anne and Aaron, for always helping on the back end of this podcast, getting it rolling. This is really their brainchild, this episode today. So it's been fantastic to bring it to you. It's been an honor to interview and talk to so many people within this community. And I look forward to the more interviews that are coming down the pipeline. I hope you enjoy them as well. And I think there'll be other people out there that might enjoy them also. So go ahead and share and follow and spread the words. And I always say, spread it to those even that don't necessarily know what FSHD is. I think these stories of people overcoming things, working through them, is inspirational, regardless if you have FSHD or not. I think this transcends beyond the disease. A lot of these conversations that I've had the privilege to have with people and how they share their lives and what they're doing and how they work through it. So take a moment today, reflect, share your story, like so many have on this podcast. If you want to share it here, you can. FSHD Radio at FSHDsociety.org is the email. You can find me very easily there or social media. And if it's not just even sharing your story, maybe you're even reluctant for that, maybe support's okay. Support someone that's on this path. Because together, we're building that louder voice. We are stronger as a community. And in the future, we have has a lot of hope. And I've said in the past in other interviews, hope can be a little scary. You're putting a lot at risk to say, I think this might be some hope. It could get knocked down. But then it's up to you to continue to fight, rebuild the hope, take the failure of what we've learned and keep moving forward till we get it. It helps. These kind of days help. It helps build the community, helps build the funding. Those are the things we need. Wear your orange today. Continue to, man, be obnoxious about it. That's what I think. Orange self, orange slice selfies. That's so hard for me to say. But it's a great way, to spread the word out, to kind of talk about that. You can find more information about World FSHD Day at fshdsociety.org/world-fshd-day. You can find it out there. Share this show. Tell more and more people about it. And lastly, I'll kind of say, when I have interviews with all these great guests and talk with them, and the thing that seems to always kind of like, I always try to think like, what's the takeaways? What are the key things that I kind of took away from the episode? Or maybe I want to point out that hopefully you saw or you heard. And you can share those takeaways with me. I'd love to hear that too. Email me that as well. Kind of that interaction is always fun. But when it comes down to it, it's always about the why. Why are you doing this? And if you can land on what that is and put it in your mind that this is the why I do something, and you keep that symbolically your north, your directional, and you keep the why where it needs to be, straightforward, you'll be surprised how focused you can stay. And it really just needs like one word even out of the why, which is a massive way to change your life, is just simply one word. So what's your why? Can you quantify it in one word? Is it hope? Why do I do this? Because I need hope. I need a focus. Maybe one word is focus. So when these things get rough, these things get difficult, they're going to. I heard a coach tell me, everything's hard. Everything's hard. The things that go well are hard. The things that don't go well are hard. The things you achieve are hard. The things you almost achieved are hard. It just really depends on which hard are you going to pursue. The one that could be equal to the failure and just make it hard. Or pursue the hard win. The win. Wins can be hard. They're hard to obtain. They're hard to get. And it's not just in athletics or sports. It's in life. Where can you get the win? This day, I think, designates that. Like, we can get a win today. This is something we can do together. So maybe by this time next year, we're talking something completely different besides just advocacy and community. We always talk about those things, but let's add the treatment. Let's add, where are we now? Let's add in even more hope and push this thing harder and faster. Let's be like that orange streak, right, through the world and show them who we are and what we can do. Show them our why. So thanks for listening to all the great interviews on this episode and all the past ones. You can find them all on Spotify or Google Podcasts, wherever else you find your podcasts. I'm a little bit of a podcast nut myself. If you want to connect with me, please do so. I'd love to hear from you. FSHDradio@FSHDsociety.org. Connect with me through social is totally acceptable. I even take direct messages. That's great too. The DMs are open for you. So let's connect. You want to be on the show, topic you want to talk about, love to hear from you. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you've enjoyed the World FSHD Day today, 2025. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. You've been listening to FSHD Straight Talk.